What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode number 126 of the Ridge Hunter Outdoors podcast. This week, we've got somewhat of a returning guest. I mean, I guess he is a returning guest. He was on the podcast before, but it was a little bit different setting. He was on with a couple different people, so we're going to get into that. I think it was a really good episode. Before we do, though, I wanted to talk about our event that we did with Tactical Approach Outdoors on Saturday, the Whitetail Workshop that Austin put together, and we kind of partnered with him on. First of all, if you're listening and you were at the event, thanks for coming out. We really appreciate you guys, and hopefully you had a good time. If you did, feel free to let everybody else know what you thought of the event. Again, if you have any questions, you can always reach out to us. If anybody that wasn't able to make it has questions about it and how it went, again, feel free to reach out to us. But I thought it was a great event. I thought there was a ton of knowledge transfer that's going to help everybody there, not just the attendees, but myself. And I feel like Austin would say the same thing, and his brother and Nate. A ton of knowledge transfer that's going to make all of us better hunters. I really do believe that if you are able to attend one of those workshops, whether it be if you have to drive a little bit, I know Austin puts a lot of them on throughout the Midwest, so there's probably one a little bit closer to you sometime throughout the year. He's going to start doing more and more of them, I think, as he rolls forwards. But if you can go to one of those, you take that knowledge in and you put it into practice, you are going to feel more tags. Like, I have very little doubts about that. If you take that stuff that he's teaching at those classes that we were able to pass on as well on the property management side of things, you're going to be a more successful hunter. And that's if you're wanting to kill, just wanting to kill a doe or two every year, or if you're trying to kill just your first buck, or if you're a more experienced hunter who's trying to kill a mature buck every year. No matter where you're at in your hunting career or on that learning curve, I think going to one of those events is going to help you become a better hunter. And again, you can also share what you know with the other people there. I think that's one of the best things about it. It's not just death by PowerPoint. I mean, we did give it somewhat of a presentation, but and Austin did as well, but it's really more of just a conversation based around hunting strategy, management strategies, and things of that nature. So it was a really good time. I think those that were there enjoyed it and hopefully took some stuff out of it. I know I did. So I think if you guys have an opportunity to go to one of those, you definitely should do it. So that said, let's get into this week's episode of the podcast. We had Drew Kaczynski back on from Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Now, that might sound familiar because he was on episode number 93 when we were up at Shelbyville at their new archery park. And that's coming up. He talked a little bit about that on this episode. That was kind of a soft opening when we were up there. And then they actually ended up getting some money for some concrete to go in, so they're working on that now. So anyway, if you were wondering about the park, he'll touch on that in the episode. But that was the last time he was on. He was on there with Stephen Groom, and then another gentleman from the Army Corps of Engineers was on that episode as well. So you can go back and check that one out. He did give a pretty good background on himself and BHA. He's going to do that a little bit again on this episode. But we more got into some issues that they're focused on right now as an organization. And we're going to continue to do this with them. We're partnering up with BHA. We're going to do an episode with Drew or somebody from BHA basically once every quarter just to update everybody on what's going on with what they're doing, some issues that might be coming up that you might want to be on the lookout for, some opportunities to help out or volunteer with the BHA, of course, the membership stuff, and he talks a lot about that on this episode as well. So we're excited that we're going to be partnering with them. It is a great organization. I think they do a lot of good. It's not one of those where you got to worry about if you're wanting to donate or becoming a member, and I think it's like $30 for membership, so it's not even a ton of money. But you don't have to worry about where your money's going. It's going to a good cause. They're doing a lot of good things throughout the country. It's a national organization, but even right here in Illinois. You don't often think about backcountry when you're thinking about Illinois and public ground necessarily, but there's a ton of public ground in Illinois, and even some stuff that I would call backcountry once you get to certain parts of the state. So, and they're about more than just that as well. Obviously, they're a lot focused on public land and public land access and taking care of the ground that we own. And he talks about all that in the episode, so I won't ruin it too much for you guys, but I think you're going to enjoy it. This is, again, Drew Kaczynski with Backcountry Hunters and Anglers on episode number 126. This is the Ridge Hunter Outdoors Podcast. Let's just start right there with a little bit of background. Now, we talked about this before because we've had you on the show before. So we've We've got a little bit, and I'll link those episodes in the description. And when I do the intro, I'll make sure and tell everybody which ones they were, because I can't remember right now. But so they can go back and listen to those and get some background too. But actually, I think the last time, maybe we did a little bit more background on you specifically, more so than the BHA. So why don't you dive in a little bit to that, and then kind of just the whole program, I guess, what it's about and everything. Introduce us to that before we get going too much.
Yeah, I'll start with an introduction of myself. Drew Kaczynski. I own 640 million acres across the United States, and I am the chair of the Illinois chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. BHA is what that is affectionately known as. And BHA is a conservation organization, chapters in almost every state and in Canada. And that is, it's a volunteer organization focused on our wild lands, public lands, maintaining access to those public lands, and making sure that they stay wild and free and available to all. That is a quick rundown of what BHA is.
What you guys do.
Focused on.
Yeah. The down and dirty, because obviously there's so much that has to go into that.
There is. I always kind of picture it as there's two sides of the BHA house. One side is making sure the public has access and maintains access, so you have the right to go to these lands. And then the other side is, when we have access, it is our responsibility to make sure that it stays clean, doesn't get ruined, isn't destroyed. So that's kind of the two sides of what we're really trying to do. I think that's, there's issues in every state. There's things that come up that, Kentucky's dealing with something. Iowa's dealing with something. They're all a little bit different, but they all tend to go back to that central mission.
Yeah. And you guys obviously help a lot with that. And that's, really, like you said, what you're doing. So how does that work with BHA? Is it like, are you guys taxpayer funded? Are you non-profit? Like,
we are a non-profit, all volunteer based. People, as the chair, I am a volunteer. I take no money from any of the Illinois members. The Illinois members, you pay a membership donation, essentially to BHA, that creates your membership, and then that money goes back into projects, public lands, across the nation and in our state. No, I donate my time and passion out of love for what I think is very important for us today, but also the people tomorrow and 100 years down the road.
It is, because like you said, you're an owner of however many million acres. If we don't take care of it as the owners of those, then number one, we're never going to get any more, which is probably a lot of slim chance anyway, just the way things are going, right? Like, there's not a lot of new public ground.
They are not making new land.
Exactly. It seems more and more that it's getting taken away. Those are the more likely chances. But the better we take care of it, and the more active we are in promoting it and the use of it, I think the better chance we have of keeping what we got. Like you said, for not only our use, but generations to come as well.
And it's changing a mentality. I think about, and this can go back further than where I'm going to start this, but think about a cassette tape in your car, right? As soon as you become irrelevant, you are no more. So cassette tapes are irrelevant.
A lot of people don't even know what they are anymore.
We went to
you're dating yourself.
CDs, and now CDs are irrelevant, and it's the same thing. If your access and involvement in public lands fades away, and your care for that fades away, it becomes irrelevant. And then who's going to protect it if it's something that we've decided we've written off that we're no longer going to look at it anymore?
Exactly.
So it's really just getting people engaged and getting people to be involved and give back.
Mm-hmm. So obviously you're talking about doing those things. What are some things that you guys are doing? Like, and you can give examples on a national level or local level that, or projects maybe you're doing to take care of those public lands and stuff. And I know you guys have like cleanup days, and maybe that's one of the examples. But
yeah, I'll throw out some examples from across the country and then also in our state too. Look at a big thing that blew up a couple of years ago was the corner crossing issue in Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
Basically there are blocks of land that are private and blocks of land that are public across really the western part of the U.S. It's very common. Some gentlemen got in trouble by crossing from one block of public to another block of public through the corner where those two blocks met.
Mm-hmm.
Resulted in lawsuits and trespassing issues, but it really is the question, like, is that allowed or not?
Right.
Did they step foot on private ground? No. But there was, it creates this issue. It's a question that we have to answer. And,
mm-hmm.
That's something BHA got involved in and still involved in to this day, and fighting for that right to be able to access those public lands,
mm-hmm.
Through other public lands.
Right.
Kentucky, recently had an issue where their state government was looking to essentially kind of push their natural resources. Their Department of Natural Resources was going to kind of become under control of like the Department of Agriculture.
Oh, that'd be great.
So you start to bring in this issue of, well, then what becomes the priority, right?
Exactly.
And that's going to have major impacts on
what drives the most money.
They won that fight. The natural resources will stay with the natural resources.
It's a novel idea.
Yeah, right.
It's little issues like that. And in Illinois, even on a smaller level, there's chapters across the nation that are doing, cleanups, floating rivers, picking up trash, walking their public lands, picking up trash.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the easiest way to be involved and like take part ownership of the land that you own.
Yeah.
In Illinois, we do those, the cleanups. I've filled up the bed of my truck with mattresses.
It's a shame, but
I get it. I think people tend to say, I wish DNR would go clean this up, or I wish Corps of Engineers would go clean this up. They are the caretaker in a way of that land, or the manager of that land. But it's just as much a responsibility on the public too.
Yep.
You shouldn't look at that mattress and think that's DNR's
exactly
problem. It's our problem.
Yep. We have a similar conversation a lot on private grounds, talking about herd management, managing deer, and the land as well, as far as food plots and bedding habitat and making sure you've got the right mixes of native grasses and things like that, where a lot of people just want to sit and I do it too, but I feel like I also do the flip side of this, but a lot of people just sit around and complain, well, the state needs to do this and the state should do this and the state should do that. News for you. This is Illinois. State's not going to do a lot for you as much as they want to, maybe. And people at an individual level that work for the state would probably love to do these things. It's just not going to happen. Money's not there. It's not their priority, whatever the case may be. So it's on us as private landowners the state's not going to help me out, but just because they let me shoot $2 a year, if that's your issue, I don't have to. I can shoot $1 a year on my property, Yep. I don't have to shoot the 2-year-old or the 3-year-old. I can shoot the 4-year-old or the 5-year-old. if there's too many does on my property, I can shoot 2 or 3 does a year. You know, I can put in food plots where I want to. I can do hinge cuts. I can put in native habitat for these deer. And if you do that, if enough private landowners get on the same page with that, then it's going to create an impact across the state without the state really having to do anything.
Yeah.
Because they're just not, I mean, they're not going to.
That's exactly, you know, what when I was talking about being irrelevant, you know, that's where I start to get worried, but we've, you hear those things all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The state should do this. I wish DNR would do this, run seasons this way, clean up this property. We've began this, like very gravel pothole filled road of, mm-hmm. have we just dissociated ourselves from the land?
Which is a very Illinois metaphor.
That's a classic right there.
Yeah.
Have we disassociated ourselves as being stewards of the land and put that on agencies?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's true. We live here. Mm-hmm. It's private, public, whatever it is, you are a steward of that land.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the few remaining places, I think, where we can have as much impact as we can have. Because if you look at, and not to get too political, but if you look at all the other institutions that used to be private and now have gone to the government, like just the education system, for example, and look how far it has come in the wrong direction versus where it used to be. I mean, we don't want that to happen with our public grounds.
Yeah.
If we just say, here you go, state, we're hands off, we're not doing anything, we want you guys to do it all, we'll throw you a little extra tax money.
Yeah, and imagine the burden, you know, I'm not discounting these agencies.
Right.
You know, they're definitely involved, but look at the burden that we've put on them to carry, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I come from the land of Lake Shelbyville. That's a federal piece of ground, a lake, ran by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. I think they have like 30 full-time employees. That's 30,000 acres that 30 employees are essentially, we as the public are saying, no, yeah. That's on you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just the statistics of how 30 people can devote their 40-hour work week to 30,000 acres and be able to manage that in a perfect way, it's impossible.
Yeah, not going to happen.
So it does take the public's involvement.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, again, we talk about that on private ground, but especially on the public ground, because like you said, we all own that. And that's all, I feel like, our responsibility to all of us. If you use it for hiking, if you just go fish public waters, if you hunt on it, whatever it is, you're using that ground, so you might as well help take care of it.
Yeah, I have I think it's on the BHA website on like my little bio there. But I have like a little quote that says, we all take something from the land, therefore we should all give back to it.
Mm-hmm.
And there isn't a soul on the earth that hasn't taken something from the land. I mean,
no doubt.
If you wear a shirt,
no doubt.
Somewhere down the line,
uh-huh.
that came from the land.
Yep.
So it's, you know, to say we're not responsible for it and it's on other folks is pretty crucial to change.
Yep, for sure. I want to jump back a little bit because you talked about the corner crossing deal. I feel like I just saw something posted about that recently. Is that from the same thing, or is there another case of that going on?
It is. No, it's the same case. It keeps keeps stirring up. There were legal ramifications as like that was a violation of law. And then it stirred up again with the public landowner was essentially like civilly suing those involved. So you kind of have two separate cases going on.
Okay.
I don't know what the dollar amount of the lawsuit was, but it was, you know, it was like suing you for $200 million or something.
Right.
Where,
yeah.
I don't know how you put a price on that, but...
That's for people who are paid more than me and you.
100%.
Definitely above my pay grade.
Yes. So is there just another question off of that. Is there a decent amount of public ground that's landlocked by private stuff that people can't get to, or is it, can you pretty much access it all? And then in that case, is that just, would that be just ground that you can't get to?
You mean besides Area 51?
Well, other than that.
You know, I can't, off the tip of my tongue, I can't, you know, really speak to how much is right. landlocked. But yeah, it certainly happens. That block management style that you see out west, where it's the checkerboard of mm-hmm. ownership, some of that can be landlocked because there's not a road leading to it.
Right.
So the only way to get to it is to cross from corner to corner to corner until you get to where mm-hmm. you wanted to be. So it's definitely occurring. I don't think it's super common in Illinois. You do, if you look down at like Shawnee National Forest, mm-hmm. You know, on the, when you zoom out, it looks like a big blob of green in southern Illinois, and it's beautiful.
Right.
When you zoom in, it starts to get very blocky. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure there are instances down there where it's the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, probably are. Like you said, though, a lot more common out there, obviously, because they don't have really a lot of places, I guess they don't have the terrain features that just naturally cut stuff. And yeah. it's just big blocks of stuff. Whereas here you look at a map of public ground, it's a lot of times all over the place.
Yeah. And then, you know, the difference here too, is in Illinois, we've got a road every mile.
Yeah, so, exactly.
In Wyoming, there may be one road for several yeah. miles.
Yeah, you can't see the next road most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. So, also with access, I know you want to talk about, because one way people do access land, private and public, is through waterways. And we talked a little bit about this at the last show we were at. I think it was the Illinois Deer Classic. And you guys had a board up about it, and you said you're kind of trying to do, you guys are focusing a little bit on that right now, some education with it. So tell us a little bit about the issue with the streams, rivers, water access, basically.
Yeah, I'll back up a little bit in time. We've been involved in this issue since 2020. And just for everybody out there, it's 2024 right now.
So, yeah.
4 years of a lot of time has been invested in how are we going to navigate this issue and how can we fix it. And really, since then, I won't even go there yet. We'll come back to that.
Okay.
But the issue at hand is that there is a federal definition of which waterways are public. They have to be navigable for the use of commerce. Now we start getting into the definition of words to decide what does that mean. When you come to the state of Illinois, the state of Illinois has its own definition of which waterways are public, and that is decided by the state. It does not coincide with federal navigation rule, but there are some rivers that are public by the state of Illinois, considered public by the state of Illinois, that are also considered public by the federal government. And then there are rivers that are considered public by the federal government that are not considered public by the state of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
So what you see out of that, and I brought some flyers in to give you a perspective of what that looks like. There's roughly 87,000 miles of rivers and streams within the borders of Illinois. So you cut out the Ohio River and the Mississippi mm-hmm. River, just in the borders, 87,000 miles. It's estimated that 1-2% of that is public by the state of Illinois. So roughly 2,000 miles of Illinois streams are legally accessible to the public.
So there's 85,000 miles that are...
There's 85,000 miles. So the map that I brought in is we highlighted the rivers that are designated public by the state of Illinois as blue, mm-hmm. and then the rest are gray. So I've been running around calling it the Illinois gray waters.
Yeah.
So, and it is gray. You know, you can access some of those rivers. You can access some of them publicly. Mm-hmm. You can go to a boat ramp and enter a body of water that is private and potentially get a trespassing charge or a civil lawsuit.
Right.
It seems very, very sticky and something that the easiest solution is, well, if we all operate under what the federal government dictates as public, that would solve a lot of this question.
Mm-hmm.
So we back up to the two words, and these are the two words that, you know, I've sat in coalitions and you get lawyers involved in these, and it'll be hours of conversation about the definition of the word the.
Yeah, and, it's really intriguing stuff.
Yeah, but the two words are navigable and commerce.
Mm-hmm.
Navigable means that there is a channel in that waterway that can support the floating of a watercraft. That's a very open definition, mm-hmm. right? What's a watercraft? Well, it may be a barge full right. of corn, but it could also be a kayak.
Right.
That is a watercraft.
It mm-hmm. is a watercraft.
And then the second word is commerce. And there's always questions about, well, what does commerce mean? That can mean the corn that's in the barge floating down the waterway. But even further than that, it does not, the federal government recognizes that commerce can be conversation between two people. Commerce can be a beaver pelt that floated mm-hmm. down that river 200 years ago. The conversation between two people is a very key aspect of commerce, because it's not just me selling something or transporting goods. It's me and you engaging in a conversation, which can grow to
right
this podcast.
Doesn't necessarily have to be an exchange of anything, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So when you think about that, as long as a river can float a watercraft and you and I can talk about it, then we've just established that that can be a public waterway.
Mm-hmm.
So that just opens up, I'm not going to say it opens up 85,000 miles of rivers, but it certainly opens up some that are currently being argued about.
Exactly. Our partners at Flambeau Outdoors have some of the best solutions in the industry for your decoy and storage needs. They're focused on innovation that matters, and they build their products to last. They're probably most known for their whitetail, waterfowl, and turkey decoys, and that's for good reason. They've got a lot of quality options at great price points in each category. The Boss Buck is a personal favorite of mine in their whitetail line, and I've been throwing their Stormfront mallards in front of duck blinds for years now. Don't sleep on their storage solutions either, though. Whether it's fishing tackle, firearms, ammo, or archery equipment, they've got you covered. They just stepped up their archery storage game, too, with the new Formula Bow Case. It might just be the best bow case on the market, and I'm really excited to use it this season and for years to come. Make the most of your time outdoors with Flambeau. Realism that gets results. If you guys plant food plots and you don't know who Grandpa Ray Outdoors is, you need to look him up. They specialize in providing the best nutrition for whitetail deer on your property, starting with the soil. They've got a full line of high-quality food plot seed and plant foods with over 14 different food plot blends to choose from. You won't have any trouble finding what you're looking for. They've got fall and spring blends, corn and beans, switchgrass, liquid fertilizer, soil test kits, you name it. When it comes to planting, they've got it. They're not just about selling their products, though. They were started in 2015. John, the owner, has been in the business since 1991. So with that knowledge that he's acquired, he's going to be able to answer any questions you have about what blends would be best for your specific property. That way you can achieve the best results possible. Like us, John and his team don't believe in a cookie-cutter approach to wildlife nutrition. They're going to treat you and your situation individually. We've used tons of their seed on client properties, on our own properties, and the results have always been as good, if not better, than advertised. That's why we partnered with them in the first place. If you want to, go to GrandpaRayOutdoors.com. Use the discount code RHOPODCAST. That's all lowercase, no space, and you get 5% off your entire order there. You guys need to go check them out if you care about getting the most bang for your buck when it comes to your food plots. Yeah, because you think about it, if you're just talking about waterways, there's certain... I mean, when you own a piece of property and it has a creek running through it, and then it's just kind of naturally agreed upon, or that you own that creek, right? Like, it doesn't have much water in it. Maybe part of the time of the year it has no water in it. Even if it's a wet creek, a lot of times it seems like that runs through the middle of my property, I own it. But when you start talking about a little bit bigger creek, like we have a few around here, or a little bit bigger river that borders on creek but is also a river that can flow to watercraft, now that runs through the middle of your property. Even if you own both sides of it, if it's, once it gets to a certain size, it's like the navigable part that you're talking about maybe comes into play. But to me, it's hard to think that you own something that's not even there all the time, right? Like the water is constantly moving. It's not even the same water. It's not like a pond or a lake where it's just stagnant and it's the same water all the time. Yeah, there's ground underneath it, kind of, but even that's moving all the time. Yeah. You know, it's an odd one.
This is, this is a conversation, a topic that is like widely disputed too. There are people that are like, absolutely not. I don't want people floating through my property.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that. There's a lot of, there's also a lot of like misinformation about what this is.
Mm-hmm.
So the way the law currently sits is if you are a private landowner adjoining a waterway that has not been designated public by the state, you own to the middle of that waterway. You can restrict access on that waterway. You own the water. If I can't float it, mm-hmm. then you own the water, you own the bed. That's where it gets really weird for me. So just like you said, you can own something that's moving.
Mm-hmm.
We can own property next to each other. My water's touching your water.
Yeah.
I got fish trespassing in my water, from yeah, your water.
Right?
I mean,
exactly.
It's just, where does it end?
And yep. Yet the court can tell you whether you can take that water or not.
100%. It's just we've been involved in this for so long, and we've had 3 bills. I'll back up again. So this really stirred up in 2020 because with COVID and state parks getting closed and restaurants getting closed and movie theaters and all these things, people naturally kind of moved to waterways because mm-hmm. they weren't closed.
Right.
So there started to be an influx of floaters, boaters, paddlers. And, you know, there were companies established that Chris Most, she's the owner of Plainfield River Tubing. They created a company that basically you can sign up and float the DuPage River in a tube. And they do a very good job at this. It's very organized. They'll transport you
mm-hmm.
Just like you would do in Missouri, right?
Right.
You go on a float trip, you enjoy the sun. They do cleanups very, very frequently.
Mm-hmm.
So they're giving back to what they're taking from. But the issue with that is that the DuPage River is private. So they found themselves in some civil lawsuit issues. And that's where we started getting involved of, is the DuPage River really private?
Mm-hmm.
As we started to dig into that one, you start to find out that there's fishing guides that have state licenses to guide on the DuPage River.
Mm-hmm.
There's public boat ramps that you can back. You can literally back a boat into the river and float down it. And there were no issues with that until this all started stirring up and there started being more people. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly everybody's kind of looks at the map and says, well, wait a minute. That's a private waterway. And now we're all going to start suing each other.
Right. There's so many little rabbit holes you could go down. A couple that just went through my mind when you said the Corps can tell you, like, well, you can't take the water or whatever. Well, you can also, if you own a pond, you can stock it with fish from wherever. But they won't let you put fish in the river from just anywhere. Even though you own it, right? I can't go stock it with fish from another pond. They get kind of sideways about that. Same thing with, like you're talking about, you said the DuPage River. He's got 10 acres and it's got, I don't know, a 3/4 of an acre pond on it. State, federal government hasn't named it yet. Yeah. Why would we name the river that somebody owns? You know what I mean?
DNR's not cleaning up your...
They are not. Are they? No, they are not.
Exactly. It's just there's a lot of weird little nuances in that.
Yeah. And at the same time that issue was going on the DuPage, there was another one that stirred up on the Maison River up north. And that was essentially a landowner who got in a kayak, floated down the Maison River, and crossed his neighbor's property line. That case went all the way to the Illinois Supreme Court. And where that goes is the Illinois Supreme Court said, yeah, you know, that's Illinois law.
Mm-hmm.
But also in their statement, they said this should be changed legislatively because it's out of date. It's confusing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what Illinois BHA started getting involved in, was let's change this legislatively. Now, we've had 3 bills since 2020 that have been proposed in the Capitol. None of them have moved or have been voted on. And essentially the legislators say, you know, well, if DNR supports this, we would do it. And DNR says, well, if we're legislatively mandated to,
mm-hmm.
We'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Supreme Court says, we're going to issue a statement that says that's Illinois law, but it should be changed. So what you find is this path of inaction is always the easiest path, right?
Yeah.
It's a big change. It's something that Illinoisans are not used to.
Mm-hmm.
Even though this exists in other states, Montana, Texas, all of them operate that you can float their waterways. So right now there's a bill in the Capitol right now, HB 4708. It's, you know, I don't want to discount it. The session is still going, you know, but I don't foresee it being voted on.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to do nothing than to change something.
Is it stuck in committee, or is it even made committee, or is it lacking a co-sponsor, or where?
It went into the rules committee. It left the rules committee, went to the executive committee, and then got kicked back to the rules committee. Now, if you've ever seen how a bill gets passed in Illinois, it's kind of like the flight path.
You have to shake your head. That's for sure.
There's just so much to it. And I think really this is why we're talking. I think the real bigger problem is, and this is why Illinois BHA is going on this endeavor. The bigger issue is that people don't realize it's an issue.
Mm-hmm.
We put that map up at the Deer Classic, and I had it printed at the Staples like that morning.
Yeah.
Because we just needed to get the story out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that drew so much conversation where people were like, I've been trespassing my whole life.
Yeah.
I float this. They were picking rivers out on the map and saying, mm-hmm. I float this river. I was just floating it.
Yep.
Apparently, we trespassed last week when we got all those caught fish on the bank pole.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the bigger issue, is that the public just isn't aware. And that's what we're really setting out to do now, is we probably move backwards on this. We proposed a bill that nobody really understood what the problem was. So I'm backing up, and we're gonna educate folks on this is the issue, this is a solution, and here's the real impacts of what this bill will do.
Yeah.
I talked about misinformation earlier. There's information out there. I don't want to get into the organizations, but there's some folks that were like, well, I don't want people in my pond. And if you guys pass this bill, I'll have people just floating in my pond. And that's not what this is. That's still your pond. You still own that pond. It's still on your property. We're talking about moving waterways that you can legally access.
Yeah.
It gets real interesting, especially when you start diving into who opposes these bills.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's very easy to find out who opposes these bills. You can look.
So you have some opposition, I guess, organized opposition.
And there are very large voices in the state of Illinois. In my personal opinion, neither one of them really have invested interest in water.
Right.
So I begin to question, you know, why are they trying to block this? And then that leads to these waters probably need to be accessible because access is conservation.
Right.
That's what will allow these rivers to survive for the next generations.
Yeah. And it's still, like you said, you can't just, even if this passed and you opened up 80,000 miles of river, you still can't walk across John Doe's property to get in the river just because you can be on that river. You still have to access it correctly.
Correct.
Right?
Yep.
But yeah, what you said right there, just on being able to access them, keeping them, just even locally, if you look at especially the bigger farms and what they do to these rivers is they want to get closer and closer and closer and farm as much ground as they can all the time, which whatever, you make more money, the more crop you get in the ground, wherever that money might come from. But what they do is they go and take all the trees off of the banks of these rivers. There's this thing called erosion. When these rivers fill up in the springtime and then in fall, they end up losing more ground than they're gaining. And now, sure, the river may be getting wider in places, but I mean, essentially you're losing what was there. It is maybe less navigable because now you have basically this big pond right in the middle of it instead of a free-flowing river. It definitely changes the ecosystem within it. And you lose a lot of stuff just based on that. And I think if you could access it publicly, if it became public access water, then there would probably be a little more restriction on what you could do with the stuff around it, not only with what's in it.
Yeah, and it would definitely lead to some, it would lead to people being able to see, wow, this river is really getting tore up, or this river just had a fish kill in it.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I think a lot of those things we don't see now because the only people that see it are the ones that own it.
Right.
I just said earlier about access is conservation. If you don't have that access, how do you ever expect to conserve it, keep it for future?
Mm-hmm.
It's funny you bring up the erosion thing. We haven't coined this this term or this title yet. So I talked about our education endeavor with Illinois BHA, and we're planning a statewide tour for the summer. And it's just a way to have an event, get people to come out, learn about Illinois streams, learn about access, learn about conservation, maybe listen to a band, maybe listen to a panel, maybe meet some of your legislators and talk to them about it. And we've been working on what are we going to call this tour? And I'm stuck on the Muddy Waters Tour. Because I feel like that's very very fitting.
Yes.
Illinois has some muddy waters.
A lot of muddy waters. Yeah.
And boy,
that's a good metaphor as well.
the access is as muddy as could be.
Mm-hmm.
I think we haven't decided that's going to be the name, but I don't know. I just said it, so that might be the name.
Yep. We don't have a lot of clear water like they do over there in Missouri that you float.
If you go, I don't know if you've ever ventured up to the DuPage River. Mm-hmm. You know, it's up on the fringes of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
But wow, that is a beautiful piece of flowing water.
Yeah.
Probably some of the clearest water, smallmouth bass all over it.
Yeah.
It's really an amazing thing that definitely should be cherished for future mm-hmm. generations.
Yeah. That backing up again, those bills that you guys are having troubles with, and you've probably figured this out, but you got to figure out some way to convince the legislators that they're going to make money off of this. And that's your key. I don't know how you do it when you're talking public land, because you don't want to charge people to be on the river, but if you want them to do something, you got to convince them they're going to make money off of it.
It's funny you bring that up, because, you know, whenever we do these things called action alerts, you know, so we'll send out an email to all the Illinois BHA members, and we'll post something online and say, hey, you know, this is an issue you should be involved in.
Mm-hmm.
On our website, you have the ability to put your name in and click submit, and it will send a letter to your representative and your senator. That letter is drafted by us, by the organization,
mm-hmm.
And you have the ability to read it before you send it. You're not just sending a blind.
It's just two words. One of them starts with F.
I've written a lot of those, and you're right. You have to pick the thing that kind of helps move the project, and money moves a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to try and look real quick because I can't think of what the number was, but it's in the millions, the tens of millions of dollars that outdoor recreation brings into the state of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, we're not going to charge you to float that river, but what you are going to do is you're going to go shopping.
Yep.
You're going to buy a kayak. You're going to buy a life jacket. You're going to buy a fishing pole.
Mm-hmm.
And all those things, you know, stimulate the economy and make Illinois a destination for outdoor recreation.
Mm-hmm. That's something that we've also talked about, going back to our conversation about deer hunting and in the state doing stuff. I think if there is a motivation for them to be more active in the conservation of a deer herd, is just what you just said right there. We've talked about it before, where a lot of people come from out of state to hunt Illinois. Why? Two main reasons, I think, and a third one maybe. The first one is we have big deer. No way around it. We've got really good hunting, especially southern part of the state. I mean, throughout the state. Middle part of the state, really. The second reason is you can buy a tag over the counter. So it's they can get here, they can buy a permit, and they can go hunt that day. And then the third one is that we are closer to a lot of people because we get a lot of Georgia, Louisiana, Tennessee. We're closer than Iowa, Missouri, even parts of Indiana for those people. But so you're talking about they're coming here, they're buying those permits, they're buying a hunting license, they're buying food at their restaurants, they're staying in a hotel or Airbnb or something, you know, they're buying gas. All that kind of stuff stimulates the economy. It's tons of money that's coming in. Why would they spend $2,000 a year and then whatever they're paying for a lease, too, mm-hmm. if they're doing it that way, to come hunt 130-inch deer when they can hunt 120-inch deer in their backyard? So this is kind of similar to what you're talking about. If you want to get your legislators on board, somehow it's got to come back to the economy, coming back to putting money in their pockets. And I think that's it, where, again, they're not going to come spend that kind of money if there's no reason to do it. If they can do the same thing at home or wherever they're from, they're not going to come to Illinois to float a river, to fish in a river if they can't even access it, if they're worried about getting sued for being on it.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of dollars that aren't going to be there.
And this stream access issues, it's affected hunters too. We have a gentleman out of Florida, that reached out, and, he was hunting in Southern Illinois, put his boat in, I believe, on the Ohio River, and then floated up a tributary of that river and accessed public land. That tributary was private.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got back, he was met at the ramp by some conservation officers who basically told him, you do it again, it's a trespassing ticket. Now, he reached out of, like, is you right. sure that's how this operates?
Right.
Everywhere else I can float, you know, wherever. And that's somebody from Florida, right? So it's not just this is not just an Illinoisan
problem. Way more than a local issue, yeah.
Yeah. And it's stirring up everywhere. I know Indiana's battling some very similar issues. The Indiana chapter, BHA, is dealing with some stream access issues over there that we just have to question, like, where, you know, if it's working in all these other states, what is the big reason of shutting it down and not trying to change it?
Yep. And you were talking about the DNR being on board or whatever. What you just said tells me that even if the whole organization is not, there's at least some officers that understand it, because if those guys that met him didn't kind of get where he was coming from, he would have got a ticket. Yeah. It wouldn't have been next time, you know what I mean?
I received a message this morning, actually, because we've been pushing a lot on social media about the issue, and received a message that a gentleman said, you know, I hope you're aware that CPOs interpret this differently. And he's not wrong. I'm sure there's CPOs that interpret it differently from other CPOs.
Oh yeah. So, I'm sure there are.
That's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's interpreted different because it's so muddy.
There's no clear definition, right?
Right. Yeah. They shouldn't have to interpret it differently. It should be black and white to those guys.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's not like a baseball game where you have a call that's discretion of the umpire. It's a little bit more serious than that when you talk about discretion of the CPO when you're talking about the law.
Yeah.
You know, well, you need something
talking about conservation
clear.
Tickets and points and, you know, going towards or going against your license or whatever. So that's a big deal.
Yeah.
It can be.
Yeah. And even beyond all of that, the money, the tickets, the lawsuits, I just always find myself going back to, we have to, if we're going to keep these for the future, we have to conserve them. And if we're going to conserve them, we got to have access to them.
Yep.
And that's my driver. If it brought 1 cent to the state of Illinois, that would be okay with me as long as we had access.
Right. Yep.
But it is a nice little perk. If, you know, Southern Illinois can benefit, or any part of the state can benefit, because people can now float these rivers.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing too. It's going to be the people like your organization, the BHA, and their members and the public land hunters who take care of it, because, and not to say none of them do, cause I know some of them do, but I would venture to say that a large percentage of the owners of those rivers and waterways don't even look at it.
Yeah.
They don't take care of it. It's on a map. They farm next to it. They've got ground next to it. Like, maybe they ride a four-wheeler past it occasionally, but it would be, in my opinion, way more taken care of if the public had access to it and were able to do that than as private land.
This has been accused of being a land grab a couple times, but we are not taking rivers from anyone.
Right.
Even the landowner will still have access
exactly.
to the river. No one will lose their right to access that water.
Mm-hmm.
So I firmly stand that this is not a land grab.
No.
It's an increase of access.
Yes. And again, you, as that private landowner, you have more access even than some people because you have a way to get to that water.
Yeah, you won't just own 300 feet.
Exactly.
Of muddy water. You'll own
yeah.
85,000 miles of it.
Yeah, for sure. I know. I think it's a good thing you guys are doing because it's even something that I hadn't really thought about ever until, I mean, I feel like we probably talked about it while we were floating the river, like, you know, who owns this or who owns that? And like, is this public access? Is it considered trespassing if we're on it? But it's one of those things, like you said, I think it's just assumed that it's flowing water. People can be on it and there's not a lot of people that know about it. So I do think it's good that what you guys are doing, and I hope that it does gain some traction because I'm with you on the, there's just so many benefits to it, and I don't see anything bad coming from it.
We have no, at least me personally, and I know the organization, we have no intentions of stopping. Just because a bill gets tossed out or whatever, we'll make more.
Yeah.
But for now, we'll educate the public and get some other folks involved and hopefully create a bigger issue or at least a bigger need of, oh, I get it now. Mm-hmm. It definitely needs changed.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's what you got to do, I guess, is when something gets tossed out, okay, why'd that one get tossed out? We'll make the next one better, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Squeaky wheel gets the grease.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Especially just in make legislation.
We'll keep greasing.
Especially in legislation. Yep.
Yep. So shifting gears a little bit here, I wanted to announce this on the podcast that we're going to be working together some now with BHA and Ridge Hunter. We're going to try to have you on or somebody on maybe once a quarter, which four times a year, just kind of bring us in, update us on what you guys got going on. I want to talk about, of course, the progress on anything like what we've talked about today.
Yeah.
Anything new, issues that might be coming up. You can keep people kind of in the loop on what's going on with BHA. We can talk about events that you guys have coming up, opportunities to help, and that kind of stuff. But I'm excited about working with you guys because I do think your organization has a positive benefit on everybody in the state. Like you said, it's not just benefiting the people who are using public ground. It also benefits the private landowners, I think, too.
Yeah.
Not, I mean, if you got a piece of private, even just regular ground next to a piece of public ground, if that public ground is not taken care of, that eventually gets over onto your property. Yeah. And then it's a bigger headache for you. If that public ground's taken care of, you don't even have, it's easier for you. You don't have to worry about it. So there's all kinds of different ways that I think BHA and your guys' mission benefits people throughout the state that enjoy the outdoors. And that's all the way from kayaking, hiking, bird watching, fishing, hunting, the whole gamut. I think you guys do a lot of good things. So I'm excited about being able to work with you guys and kind of partner up and getting the word out there even more. If you guys are looking for your own piece of ground to manage and hunt, Rodney Hawkins is a guy you need to talk to. He grew up hunting and fishing in Southern Illinois, and he's now putting that love for the outdoors into selling recreational properties as a land specialist with Midwest Farm and Land. Midwest Farm and Land isn't your average real estate company. They do residential properties, but they also do a ton of recreational property sales as well. Rodney himself sold over $7 million worth of properties last year alone. They've got agents like him all over Illinois, so they're really a local company with a national reach. For more info on them, what might be available, or even getting your property listed if you're looking to get rid of one and maybe get into something else, you can contact Rodney directly at 618-925-3153, and he'll get you taken care of. He's also got his own company called RG Outdoors that currently has products from Radix Hunting, Tacticam Trail Cameras, Camo Dust, and he's adding new stuff all the time. So if you're interested in any of that, go over to their Facebook page, RG Outdoors, email them at rgoutdoors@yahoo.com, or again, just call Rodney directly at 618-925-3153. Hey, everybody, I appreciate you tuning in for another episode. If you don't already, go over to Instagram and Facebook and give us a follow at Ridge Hunter Outdoors. We also have a private Facebook group called Ridge Hunter Nation where you guys can have some input on the show. You can ask us questions. You can ask upcoming guests questions. You can tell us who you want us to have on and what you want us to talk about. And on top of all that, just use it as a regular hunting group. Share your stories, your success, pictures, your failures, whatever it is. That's all at Ridge Hunter Nation on Facebook. Our website is ridgehunteroutdoors.com. That's where you're going to find more info on the consulting and management services that we provide. We also have
the podcast posted on the website with some other content as well. And we have our merchandise and our food plot seed. And if you find any of that stuff that you want, make sure you use the discount code RHOPOD. That's all caps, no space. And you get 10% off your entire order there. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or anywhere else that lets you do so, make sure you rate and review. That helps us, and give us a follow there too. YouTube, our channel is Ridge Hunter Outdoors. You can subscribe to that, hit the notification bell so you know when everything comes out. The podcast will be posted there, as is our Fall Pursuit show, which we'll have more of coming up next season. You guys can go back and rewatch everything that we did this year. We had 10 episodes on that. We're hopefully going to do some turkey hunting this spring. And of course, we'll have all our off-season content on YouTube as well. So thanks to everybody who already does follow and subscribe. If you don't, make sure you go do that. Now let's get back to the episode.
I'm really, really excited that you guys were willing to do that and be a big supporter. One of the biggest issues, I talked about staying relevant. It's so hard in today's world to get the message out. I can create a Instagram post, or I can put something on Facebook. In 30 seconds, you've been run over by the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And it's just trying to find different ways, even down to sending emails to folks. I mean, you can't buy a battery at Dollar General without putting your email in.
Exactly.
Right? I mean,
yeah. How many of them do you get every day? Right.
It's finding different avenues to get the word out there. And I think, this is one piece of that. Mm-hmm. And it's super crucial. And I hope as people listen that they start to think, you know, yeah, I don't have to devote every hour of my free time to cleaning up some public land.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't mind going to BHA's event next weekend and helping out.
Yeah.
And that's all that it's about. Mm-hmm. So it'll be fun, and we'll definitely, you know, we've got a couple projects going, other than stream access, and it'll be great to update you on those.
Yeah, for sure.
We can jump into two of those if you want. They're super quick, and I know because people listen, they're going to ask, well, what about the archery park?
Uh-huh. Yep, because we were there, when was that, last fall?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just before, was it August maybe? Just before season, right?
Yeah. September.
September. Yep. Okay, yeah.
The archery park is, it's still underway. Just so everybody knows, that is a, BHA doesn't own that land.
Right.
Well, we kind of do because it's public.
Public.
But, but that is still federal property managed by U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. There's certain rules and things that have to stay in place. Mm-hmm. One of those is that a certain portion of that park has to be handicap accessible.
Right.
Which is great because I want everybody to have the opportunity to use it. With that comes procurement for concrete,
mm-hmm.
and contractors for concrete, and that's where we're at right now. And they did start some work out there on the parking lot just a couple weeks ago, and we're hoping to get the concrete in once the concrete is done. And this, it's just a sidewalk to some target areas and mm-hmm. the practice area, a parking pad for vehicles. Once that's done, we are basically ready to hang signs, post targets, and she's open.
It'll be open.
So I'm hoping, I'm praying for before October.
Yeah, right. And that's even something too that's not necessarily like public land access related or taking care of the public grounds, but it's another thing that you guys are involved in that I think really benefits everybody, because especially once you get towards the bigger cities, not everybody has a place they can go shoot. And this is a spot where not only can you go shoot your bow, but you get some actually kind of realistic practice heading into the season. You've got different ranges you got to figure out. And it's fun, too. It's not, you're not just shooting at a piece of paper for 15 minutes a day just because you want to get your practice in. You can go out there and make a day of it, really.
Yeah.
Morning and afternoon, whatever.
That project was never really about, you know, it's not a cleanup. It's not a... habitat project. There will be some habitat implemented in there, so it'll form into that. Mm-hmm. But really what it was about was just creating opportunity for people to be involved and see that, oh yeah, like my public land is it's a great place to be.
It's a little more tangible, I think, to people.
Yeah.
And accessibility to anyone and everyone, no matter what you're able to do, mobility or not, how mobile you are, it's accessible to you, which I think is great.
Yeah. I'm hoping that, that stirs into kind of the model example for other public areas where, you know, maybe even in other states that they'll look and see, wow, mm-hmm. like look what happened at Lake Shelbyville. And it was done by volunteers and sponsors.
Yeah.
We should do that. And it'll continue, and there'll be a little fire that spreads there.
Mm-hmm.
Another project that we have going is a habitat pollinator project that we're going to be working on near Pawnee, Illinois.
Okay.
And that's just going to be a company is wanting to not have to mow.
Right.
And we kind of thought, well, there's better things you can do there that can benefit. And working with Pheasants Forever on getting some pollinator out there and hopefully also make that little piece of land semi-publicly accessible. Mm-hmm. So at least you can, like, go out there, maybe learn a bit about pollinators, see how that looks, what it does to the environment. It's not a grand, huge, we didn't create a new state park, but
right.
We created something that is going to benefit the world, I think.
Mm-hmm. We do some consulting work and management work and stuff, and that's something I think a lot of guys overlook when it comes to, because everybody, when they're doing this, they're focused on whatever they're trying to hunt. Well, to have better game, you have to have better habitat to some extent. I mean, it all works together, right? Pollinators and pollinator blends are something that, like, we'll put in on a consult occasionally if they don't have naturally enough of them around. It's so important, but it's so overlooked because no one thinks about it.
Yeah,
you know, but it's one of those things that if you don't have it, you don't really know you don't have it, but you're trying to figure out why stuff's not growing like it should, right? And then once you do have it, it's like, oh, it makes a huge difference on not only, like, let's talk about fruit trees, anything like that, but also just your regular food plots. Think about a clover plot with all the bees and stuff that you see in a clover plot. If they have nowhere to come from or nowhere else to go, you're not going to have them. It's not going to grow as well. There's so much that goes into that I think gets overlooked. So even that's a benefit to, again, even the private ground that's around that area, I'm sure.
Yeah, it won't just benefit that. 5 acres or whatever, it'll benefit acreage that maybe a mile, 2 miles away.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've all ever been to Pawnee, but that may be one of the windiest areas in Illinois.
Yeah.
There's just not a lot of trees. It's a lot of ag fields and
right.
And not a ton of habitat. Mm-hmm. You get into the Springfield Lake area, there is some, but it'll be a cool thing to see, and it'll be cool for people to go experience that, and hopefully the local school will get involved, and mm-hmm. Some kids will be able to be a part of that too.
Those are the things that the outreach things. You build friendships, you build partnerships. If you get the school involved, now the young people are all of a sudden, hey, what is this? And then they grow up as a friend to the BHA, as opposed to who are those folks, and it all builds.
Yeah. This is not about me or you or it's really about the people. I always say 10, 20, 30, 100 years down the road.
Mm-hmm.
We are responsible for building what that looks like. And it starts with education and involvement.
And maybe a 5-acre patch of the pollinator.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. That little piece right there just might change somebody's mind and say, yeah, that's something we should do.
Mm-hmm.
And then next thing you know, you got some kid that becomes the next pollinator planter.
Yeah, or the next chairman of the BHA. He volunteers his time on top of his job.
Or even go further, that may be the kid that becomes the director of the Department of Natural Resources.
Yeah.
Or the governor or the president. And now you have somebody that has a deep involvement in conservation who's also in a leading position in our agencies.
Mm-hmm. Which we definitely need more of.
Yeah.
But, so well, that's all stuff that you guys got going on right now. Hopefully people listening to this will kind of think about it, maybe want to be involved. If they do, how do they get involved with BHA? And then what does that look like as, let's say, you can get involved in ways without becoming a member, and then if they do want to become a member, what does that look like?
Yeah, there's so if somebody wants to learn more about BHA, they can go to the website backcountryhunters.org. We have you can read all about the organization across the whole nation. Illinois has a page on there, so you can look up the Illinois chapter and you can read more. Our email's on there. We get folks that reach out all the time of, you know, what can I do? How can I help? Mm-hmm. You don't have to be a member to be involved. You can show up to, these are public events. Anybody can show up. Mm-hmm. The one thing I will say is that a membership is essentially it's close to $30 now for a year. But that money goes back into the organization, which then allows us to host these events. It's a lot of it comes from donations. You know, I donate time, I donate funds to these events, but it can't come from one person. It comes from all the people.
I will say, from the outside looking in, the $30 for a membership is much more efficiently spent than your tax money that's going to the state.
It's a pretty low, it's a low cost. And what you get out of that membership is you get subscribed to all of the emails. So you get updates on here's an event, mm-hmm. Ways you can be involved. You also get a quarterly journal, printed journal that comes out that you can read, share with folks, and you can point to things in that journal and say, I was there. I was involved in that. I think that maybe the greatest thing you get out of a membership is just knowing that you did something. You did something to make it all better.
Mm-hmm.
Not required, certainly beneficial to the organization and to the future of those lands.
Yeah. That's something, too, and not to get down in a whole rabbit hole, but in today's society, I think it's important as ever for people, a lot of people, to feel like that they belong to something.
Yeah.
And, like, I think that's one reason, like, churches are so important, even if you're not completely, like, a religious person. It's a belonging to a community. And I think, you know, having a membership with an organization like a BHA that is so actively involved in, like, your local communities, you can see it, right? Yep. I think that could be important for people, too, that maybe just need something that, like you said, they can feel some pride in that, hey, I'm a part of something good.
And BHA is a community. I mean, some of my best friends I met through the organization. One of my best friends, he owns a store in California, Sheepshead Outfitters. We met in Montana at a BHA event.
Mm-hmm.
He was from living in Texas at that time. And we've hunted on trips and hiked around the Frank Church wilderness, mm-hmm. chasing elk. And last night, you know, we're sitting there texting back and forth about going on a bear hunt in California, maybe this fall. And like that never would have happened if I wasn't involved in this organization. I wouldn't even know this guy.
Yeah.
And now I talk to him all the time.
How would you know some guy from California?
Yeah.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's little things like that. And I talked about the Frank Church trip. You know, I just reached out to the Idaho BHA chair, never met him before. I sent an email and said, hey, I'm the Illinois BHA chair.
Mm-hmm.
going to be in your state, going to the Frank Church. Got any advice? You know,
we're
never even been to Idaho.
We're the 360s.
And, and it was like instantly a phone call. Hey, happy to help you.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put a price on contacts and like-minded folks. And BHA is probably one of the most important things with that organization is the people.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody will tell you that. I think every member will say, it's the people that I love the most, because they're involved, they carry the same passion, and none of us, all different walks of life, all different political beliefs, nobody talks about any of it. Mm-hmm. They just want to do something good for conservation.
Yep.
And man, that's a breath of fresh air.
You're not kidding.
Today's world.
When you get that many people who are all on the same page for the same mission, like, yeah, you build those relationships and you don't have to worry about the other stuff. You guys are focused on what you're doing and it makes it so much easier, so much more fun too.
Yeah.
So if I join BHA at the national membership, and because we have a lot of listeners around here that actually maybe own ground here or hunt ground, but they're from other states, and maybe they're interested in as much what goes on in their hunting area in Illinois as they are where they live in Louisiana, for instance. Do I get national stuff? Do I get chapter stuff from Illinois because that's what I want? Or how, what does that look like?
So you'll get notifications. So when you join BHA, you're joining a national organization. And then based off of where your home address is, that's where you're going to start receiving, okay, you live in Illinois, here's an Illinois event. You're mm-hmm. going to receive notifications from the Illinois chapter. That said, like through the journal, you start to see this is what's happening in other states. And we'll push things for other states too. I know Kentucky has a small game boot camp event coming up June 9th, I believe. And that's in Paducah. That's something that we've pushed out to Illinois members of mm-hmm. like, I mean, Paducah, you basically... Illinois.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. It ain't that far.
You know, it's something like that where, and we do the same thing with Missouri too. They host a lot of events in the St. Louis area. So we'll push things out of, you know, it's not that far.
Right.
You can go help them out and do that event. And we appreciate that. You know, it shouldn't just be, oh, I'm only working on this in Illinois. It's wherever you want to be involved.
Right. Okay.
Cool. Do you got anything else that we didn't hit on that you want to get into?
You know, I think if I was going to leave any parting words, I would just say, do something to get involved in the land. And the quickest way for you to do that is to join BHA.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you have an event in mind, you have some project that you want to do, reach out to the Illinois chapter and let us know, and we'll help facilitate and figure out how we can make it happen.
Yeah. Well, anybody listening, I know there's a lot of organizations out there, and there can be a lot to sift through and wondering, are these people legit? Are they really doing what they're saying they're doing? BHA is really doing what they're telling you guys they're doing. Your money's going to a good cause. You're going to benefit from it yourself as well, but you also should go into it looking to give more than you're going to take. I feel like that's just a general rule of thumb with a lot of things. You're going to get more out of it if you go in with that attitude. But there's a lot to benefit from it. And I appreciate what you guys are doing, and I'm glad to be partnering with you guys. And I appreciate you making the drive down today to talk
great.
To us about it, man.
I'll drive down here anytime. This is great. So
heck yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. All right. We'll leave them there. We're good.